That was a fun conversation I was having with Cody there for a minute, thinking about how you could use a nickel. There are so many things you could do with it. You could take it home and you could put it in your piggy bank. You could put it in the offering plate. You could share it with someone. I appreciate Cody thinking about what he's going to do with his nickel, and I would commend to all of us that kind of thoughtfulness about how we use our nickels. I think that's what the scripture passage from Mark that we're going to read together today gets us to think about. How do we use our stuff? We're reading from Mark chapter 12, continuing our journey through the Gospel of Mark. Jesus has entered the city of Jerusalem, and he's spending a lot of time teaching to larger and larger crowds, but he's getting a lot of attention along the way. And when he was at the temple, Jesus began to speak to them in parables, Mark tells us. A man planted a vineyard, put a fence around it, dug a pit for the wine press, and built a watchtower. Then he leased it to tenants and went to another country. When the season came, he sent a slave to the tenants to collect from them his share of the produce of the vineyard. But they seized him and beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And again, he sent another slave to them. This one they beat over the head and insulted. Then he sent another, and that one they killed. And so it was with many others. Some they beat and others they killed. He still had one other, a beloved son. Finally, he sent him to them, saying, "They will respect my son." But those tenants said to one another, "This is the heir. Come, let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they seized him, killed him, and threw him out of the vineyard. What then will the owner of the vineyard do? He will come and destroy the tenants and give the vineyard to others. Have you not read this scripture? The stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. This was the Lord's doing, and it is amazing in our eyes. When they realized that he had told this parable against them, they wanted to arrest him, but they feared the crowd, so they left him and went away. Then they sent to him some Pharisees and some Herodians to trap him in what he said. And they came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with the truth." I love that. They're trying to ingratiate themselves to Jesus, but essentially what they say is totally true. "Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" But knowing their hypocrisy, Jesus said to them, "Why are you putting me to the test? Bring me a denarius and let me see it." And they brought one. Then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" They answered, "The emperor's." Jesus said to them, "Give to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, and to God the things that are God's." And they were utterly amazed at him. Some things never change, do they? People always complain about taxes. We're all getting a little tense right now as April 15th rolls closer and closer. Those of you who are CPAs, probably especially busy right now. And 2,000 years ago, people were complaining about paying taxes too. But I wonder what would happen if we didn't pay our taxes, or rather, what wouldn't happen if we didn't pay taxes. Do you ever think about that as you're filling out your forms and as you're mailing away your tax returns or hitting the electronic send button to send them in? What would happen if we didn't pay our taxes. We like to think that we're self-made people in this country, self-made men and women, but if you think about it, really not a one of us can make it on our own. Any of us who professes to be self-made should take a step back and think about the fact that the stuff that our taxes support actually enables us to get on and get ahead. The rule of law, the courts, they protect our inventions if we're creative folks. Law enforcement officials protect our property so we don't have to hire private security in this country. Public roads get our products to market in ways that we'd never be able to do without them. Publicly educated employees help our businesses to thrive. Publicly regulated water and electricity and telecommunications and a whole host of other things provide the raw resources that we need to do business. Imperfect as they are, our governments work for the greater good. And so when Jesus says, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's," it makes sense to our modern ears. Complain about the government if you must, but pay your taxes and elect officials who you trust to work for the common good. And then I'd add, pray for them regularly. They need our prayers. That's part of anyone's responsibility for living in organized society. We support the organizations and the communities that we're a part of. And in our country, we're blessed to have a say in who's elected to leadership. Not everybody is so lucky. The Jews didn't feel so lucky living under Roman occupation. But even so, Jesus didn't give his interrogators permission to dodge their tax payments. Those coins in their purses had power, just like our money has power today, to buy roads and water and access to education and health care. Our collective wealth has incredible power. And I think that's why Jesus doesn't shy away from this conversation about money. Even though the conversation is motivated way more by a sense of trying to catch him and bring him down than it is about honest disciples trying to learn about how to walk the way of faith. Jesus had just entered Jerusalem, and almost instantly you could feel the tension starting to grow around him as one group after another of the religious leaders and the political leaders attempt to ensnare him and bring him down. They didn't like the attention that he was getting. First, it's the chief priests and the scribes who are challenging his authority to teach in the temple. Now the Pharisees and Herodians are sent to trick him into political suicide with this question about taxes that seems so simple on the surface. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? There had been riots in Jerusalem, and the zealots were fighting. There were insurrections all over the place. People objected to Rome. They objected to these taxes because they objected to the Roman occupation of their territories. For them, these taxes were absolutely awful. If Jesus said it was lawful to pay Roman taxes, a lot of Jewish people would say he was wrong, and they would walk away. He'd lose his following, the leaders thought. But if Jesus said it was unlawful to pay the taxes to Rome, the religious leaders would be sure to turn Jesus in, because that's seditious behavior, punishable by death at the hands of Romans protecting the empire. But if you notice, Jesus doesn't get hooked by the question. Instead, he uses the question to propel everybody's attention from Rome out here back to the place of their true allegiance, back to God. Give to the emperor the things that are the emperor's, okay, Jesus seems to say, but give to God the things that are God's. All of a sudden, the conversation isn't about taxes and what we might gain or not gain from the payment of taxes. The question is, how does one live when one belongs wholly to God? I'll say it again. How does one live when one belongs wholly to God? This is the season of Lent, a season that we enter into with the words, "Remember, you are dust, and to dust you shall return." We enter this season of Lent being reminded that we bring nothing into this world and we will leave this world with nothing. If we want to claim our allegiance to God, Jesus seems to be saying, we must recognize that we are owners of nothing, but stewards of everything. Best way I can think to describe a steward in modern day terms, since most of us don't have household stewards anymore, is to think of the difference between home ownership and house sitting. I'm sure some of you have had house sitters before. Ken and I had a house sitter while we were away on sabbatical last year at this time. House sitter came into our home, cooked meals in our kitchen just the way we did, ate off of our dishes just the way we did, brushed their teeth in our sinks, took their showers in our bathrooms, in our showers using our towels. They slept in our bed. They lived in our home with the same comforts and amenities that we have. It was theirs to be used, and we hoped that they would care for it the way we would care for it, and lucky for us, they did. But imagine if they had broken our dishes, or if they had ruined our furnishings, or sold our cars, or ripped the siding off our house in some wild party to have a bonfire, or worse yet, if we came home and they had changed the locks so we couldn't get in, kind of like those vineyard tenants in the first story that we heard today, acting as if our home belonged to them and denying that it was ours. Mark Allen Powell, who wrote the book Giving to God, said that a fundamental problem with humans is that they don't always realize that God is only letting them use what still belongs to God. He says that when we are faithful stewards, we manage our money and the earth and our bodies and our time and everything else in God-pleasing ways. When we are faithful stewards, we manage it all in God-pleasing ways. Which should be good news, because God is such a wildly generous, loving person. We have incredible permission to be wildly generous with everything. In fact, the good news of biblical stewardship is that those who live as people who belong to God experience life at its absolute best. Giving to God isn't awful at all. It is awful, A-W-E, awe-filled, to live a life giving our all to God. Milo Kaufman, in his book, Stewards of God, says, joyful people will be generous people, and generous people will be joyful people. It's difficult to say which is cause and which is effect, for either appears to produce the other. So start where you want. If you're joyful, you'll be generous. If you're generous, you'll be joyful. So knowing that, I wonder what would happen if you let God guide the way you spent your time and your money. What would it look like if you spent the resources available to you in ways that were attempting to be pleasing to God? Who knows what it might look like? It might not look the same for you as it looks for me. If we look at the biblical record, it probably will look wildly different for each of us. Jesus had so many encounters with people about how they used their money. But all the stories are a little bit different. Like a few weeks ago, we had the story about Jesus telling a man, sell all you have and give the proceeds to the poor. But next week, we're going to have a story in the same gospel even, where Jesus sees a woman giving a coin, one measly little coin, and he lifts her up as a marvelous example to the leadership. Well, and then there's Zacchaeus, who gives half of all he has away. So all of it, half of it, a little of it. Jesus told a lot of stories about how people handled the wealth that was entrusted to them. He told the story about the fool who kept building bigger and bigger and bigger barns until he just dropped dead. He told another story about a rich man named Lazarus, not the Lazarus who was brought back from the dead, about this Lazarus who was so wealthy, he always was hosting opulent banquets, but there was a poor, hungry man outside of his door that he never, ever noticed. Well, he wanted that poor man, after he died, he wanted that poor man to go back to his sons and give those sons a message about how to do it differently than he had, because he realized he had made a mistake. One thing Jesus makes perfectly clear is that whatever we do for others out of a generous spirit, Jesus will feel as if we've done it for him personally. I want us to think about that question, what would it look like in our lives if we gave to God the things that are God and held up the mirror so that we saw not only our whole life, but everything that's in it. The whole house, the whole two-car garage, and everything that fills it up, everything that's in every single room, every connection that we have in our family tree and in our business relationships. What would it look like if I gave everything to God that is God's? What would happen if I managed every resource at my disposal in God-pleasing ways, or at least I attempted to do that? But then I realized that sometimes it's not about the thinking. Have you ever heard someone say that it's not very easy to think your way into a new way of being or a new way of acting? It's a lot easier to act your way into a new way of thinking, that our actions are what shape us far more than our thinking shapes our actions. So I want to invite you to try to do what Jesus said. Give to God what's God's. Live your life shaping it in that direction. And I bet you will be amazed. I bet you will be amazed. And I bet what you will realize is that doing that is not awful. It is awe-full. Awe-filled life is what Jesus calls us to. And I think his teaching today is part of the key for us. And that key, friends, is in our hands. Thanks be to God.